All right, folks, World Cup Downhill kicked off the year in style, and this is your Maxxis Tyres post-race show for the opening round from Fort William, Scotland. Maxxis is synonymous with racing and is the name that comes to mind when you think of performance. It's no surprise then that they've won more than any other brand in the history of World Cup racing. No matter where or how you ride, Maxxis has the tyres for you with a wide range of tread patterns, casing and compound options. Personally, for my enduro bike, I run the DHR2 Max Terra Double Down on the rear, paired up with the Assegai Max Grip on the front in the slightly lighter XO Plus casing, which I find is tough enough for most of the riding I do. The downhill bike has got the DHR2 front and rear, both with the DH casing and both with their super grippy Max Grip compound. Those setups work great for me, but have a look at what they have to offer and see what you think is going to be best for you. You can check out the entire range of Maxxis tyres over at maxxis.com and find the tyres at your local Maxxis dealer. You can also give them a follow on Instagram where they're at Maxxis Bike. All right, World Cup Downhill is back. Fort William delivered a brutal track and testing conditions, and we're going to be digging into the details of what went on over the weekend. So here's your Maxxis Tyres post-race show for the opening round of the 2024 Downhill World Cup in Fort William, Scotland, with Nico Mullally and Ollie Morris.
We are back. We're in person for the first recap of the year, which is always the best way to do it. I'm here with Ollie Morris and Nico Mullally. Ollie, we'll start with you. How's it going? A big change for you from last year to now.
Sure was. First thing to do is thank you for the seat that you've provided me, Chris, because it's been a long week, that's for sure. First round, on a personal note, first race out with our team. So all the usual sort of teething problems, but been an awesome week, thank you. And yeah, like I say, the next hour sitting down is going to be very nice.
Good. And you guys look slick, to be fair. Like, props for the pit setup, the kit, everything. Like, looks on point. The team seem to be happy, so
cheers, mate. Yeah.
Going in a good direction, eh?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we haven't hidden the fact, although it looks like we're trying to hide the fact that, you know, budget isn't exactly our strong point, but we're begging, borrowing as much as we can, and we want to, you know, we want to try and show that, yeah, just because you're not an elite team with, you know, millions of pounds, that you can still put on a proper show and put on a proper team.
Yeah, definitely, man. And Nico, you two are here with a pretty different setup from last year, much bigger, two more riders on the team. Has it all come together how you hope for the first race?
Yeah, we're incrementally climbing the ladder, I'd say. It's definitely a lot different having two other riders to look after than just doing it myself. I'd say it makes it, I don't know, I just feel responsible for them, so I want to make sure that they have what they need. And once we got here, I could enjoy, I'd say the hay was in the barn.
I like it. It's a good way to phrase it. Well, let's start with this track. Ollie, a few significant changes, and I saw you on track walk earlier in the week, and you said you've been here a couple of weeks back and the track was easy in comparison to Fort William of old. Talk us through those changes, and also, do you still feel the same way about that? Because it feels like it's evolved a bit this week.
It for sure has evolved, yeah. And credit to the guys riding, especially from yesterday afternoon into today, because it was, you know, the holes had come out, and where they were very, very soft, and they went from very soft to then a boulder or a really harsh rock. So that was definitely hard. But like I say, this track, you know, we used to call this "Can you get under 5 minutes" track, and now it's apparently today, short of a couple of seconds, can you get under 4 minutes? So it's changed in terms of that. Like, when you're leaving the top, or when the riders are leaving the top, there's less of that, like, this is a chore, and it's getting closer to, and not quite there, but closer to a sprint track. You know, you've got to get yourself to the woods as quick as you can. You've got to be there one of the fastest to give yourself a shout. And then once you are there, obviously no mistakes through the woods, but I mean, Nico are no more here, but it's pretty much straight to home from there now, isn't it?
Yeah, once you hit that road gap and the gravelly left turn, you're home free.
Yeah.
You've made it through 90% of the things that are going to kill you.
Yeah.
How did you find the changes, Nico? Because it is pretty different from the Champs track in what they've done with it.
I'd say most riders were saying it's just coming at you so fast from the first run. They moved the start, so it took, I don't know, 5-10 seconds of sprinting out of it.
Yeah.
And gave you even more speed into the first section, and then just tried to sort of straighten up sections where they could and build up some of the corners to carry more speed. And it, the goal, it seems like the trend's going that way, to make the racing exciting to watch and keep the time slot shorter for mm-hmm. each run. So coming to a long track like this, obviously you got to make it faster if you want it to be shorter.
Yeah.
And that's how it felt from run one. It was like, man, this thing is rapid.
Yeah. And lots of punctures this year, it seems. I mean, it's one of the tracks where we get more broken wheels and more punctures than others, but it feels like it's been more than normal this year. Any observations on why that might be? Is it just that we're going even faster into all the edges?
I think from what I've seen trackside, number one is, as we say, there's those rocks that were coming out, you know, with the soft bits in front of them. So that's for sure. The other thing is no one's going to slow down. There's not an option anymore to kind of just nurse it through, is there? You know, so I think that's another thing. It's like they're just hitting them and your equipment's going to have to deal with it. But from what I'm seeing, it was less punctures and more wheels causing the punctures than the actual tire slicing or just an old school puncture. You know, it was people's wheels were getting shattered kind of thing. So, clearly given some impacts. And I guess to add to that, we've already said it's slightly straighter, slightly faster. So the rocks are getting hit harder. So, it could be that. But yeah.
And Nico, we're like the schedule now, there's less time than ever, I think, for practice, it feels. And I guess a puncture is a pretty significant part of that. So you're going to be slower on that run. Your mechanics then got to rebuild things. Like, is it a real issue getting, you know, a few punctures through a week like this now?
I didn't have any this week. Angel didn't have any. Asa had two, actually.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he was just going faster than us.
but
for sure than me. Time will tell with the other. Luckily, we had a bunch of spare wheels with tires mounted, so it was pretty quick to swap. And it was nice enough for the guys across here at WR1 to, Mark Wallace walked over and said, hey, our line spotter just radioed down that Asa got a flat, so if you guys have a wheel ready, maybe you can change it quicker. And Ancho ran over to the finish and was there when he came down with the wheel. So that was super cool of them to do. And he didn't really miss too much. I mean, missed obviously out on that run where he had to roll down. But we kind of prepared to get that stuff changed pretty quick.
Yeah, interesting. I heard Amory had a puncture in the top section. He pulled up in the woods to one of the team staff, radioed down to the pit, and a mechanic brought him up a fresh wheel on the e-bike, which is pretty cool because then at least you're not throwing away learning on half a run. Like, it just shows it's this like marginal gains thing that the big teams with plenty of staff have got those opportunities to do. But I thought that was kind of a cool nugget.
I have seen them before with wheels on track, and it was something I've contemplated doing with our team, but it's a big job for something you might never need.
Well, this is
a big insurance policy.
For sure. You just go and hide them in the woods throughout the
week. Stashy 13 wheels up there. Yeah.
Like shovels when you're building trams. And we should talk about Amory's bike a little bit, actually. I spotted a steel chainstay on that bike, Nico. Any thoughts on that? Obviously, you've played around a lot with steel.
Yeah, it was honestly pretty interesting material choice for a chainstay. With steel, it's so strong that you can use a smaller cross section and give you more flex for the same strength. So obviously what they were looking for is a more compliant chainstay, more compliant rear end. So it's interesting, like the whole bike works as a system, and that's not to say that same philosophy would work on every bike, but for theirs, that's what tells me what they were looking for is it's a little bit more flex out of the rear of the bike. So it's cool to see them being willing to try stuff like that. It's a bit outside the box, and there's a lot of other big name brand teams here that probably wouldn't go for something like that.
Yeah, it's cool, huh?
So it's super cool.
Yeah, and he also has this CODS thing on his bike, which I believe stands for Keep Our Device Secret. We've done a bit of sleuthing. I've chatted to a few engineers, and we're relatively convinced that it's most likely to be an adjustable height idler. That he has a remote for on the bar so that he can adjust the position of the idler on the fly on the track. Again, you've played around enough, Nico, with bike design to have a feel for what that might do. Do you think that could be beneficial here?
Yeah, I think so. I talked to a few people and had a couple different ideas on what it could be too. There was some thought of maybe like, I don't know it's exactly this, but like Yeti Switch Infinity, how he has like a small shock in the linkage somewhere.
Maybe
adjusting something like that.
Yeah.
But the idler thing does make sense. Like, basically, the idler pulley on a high pivot bike takes away chain growth. Mm-hmm. It takes away pedal kick. And where it's placed will affect the anti-squat of the bike. So as you're sprinting it, how much the bike bobs or stiffens as you under chain tension. So the problem is that the two are normally coupled. So you have pedal kick with a stiff pedaling platform. And being able to adjust it would allow him to sprint the bike. And it's not just sprinting, it's acceleration. So even a pumping, a landing or something, the chain tension will stiffen the bike. Mm-hmm. So in the section like the bottom, the motorway, you would want a stiffer pedaling acceleration platform.
Yeah.
And if that's what he's using, it's pretty cool. I think, yeah, there's a few different ways to use it. I see, or a few different ways to achieve it. You see the, like Troy and Luca were on flight attendant.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do something similar, gain an advantage in that section. And if Amari's doing it mechanically with the frame, using electronics to do a mechanical change versus using electronics to do a hydraulic change.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is cool. Yeah, there's cool stuff going on. Another thing we spotted was Loic. I think yesterday we first saw these disc rotor fairings, both front and rear on the bike. The rear looked like it had some kind of intake duct and an exhaust like vents. The front looked more solid with because the caliper's kind of exposed, I guess, so the cooling is less of an issue. The claim yesterday to whoever covered it, I think it was Pink Bike that shared it, was that they were there to help the disc brake performance in damp conditions. Yet he turned up on a very dry day in Fort William with the front one still on the bike today, which suggests to me that they think there's an aerodynamic benefit and probably know in specialized gravity there. They don't think, they probably know. I suspect they've been in a tunnel. Again, anyone want to offer any thoughts on that front disc cover?
I'll answer this because I ride in the UK, which is always wet. So, yeah, I think that as an idea, based on the original thoughts you were saying or reasons of it helping keep, you know, keep the disc warm, you know, like, so it doesn't actually get wet as much. I think it's a great idea. And especially here where in sector one, if it was wet in sector one, you're not braking very much. So you come into the rocks, don't you? You're absolutely flat out. And if it was wet, that's where you're going to need the brakes to work pretty well. So, I like the idea and I've probably spoken about it with many riders over many years, but never actually done it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So fair play.
Yeah, be cool to see how that progresses and, again, whether other riders copy that. It's a fairly easy thing to 3D print, and if you can draw something up quickly, you'll probably get one for Poland. So we'll see what happens there. The other bit of tech that stood out this week and has had a lot of chat on the internet and at the event is the Fox Speed Suit. They've got creative and converted their Moto One Piece that debuted earlier in the year. They've made it UCI compliant and brought it here. I think one team filed a complaint earlier in the week, which meant the UCI came and had a proper look at it, and it was cleared. So it's been on the hill with Tani, Nina, and Laurie over the weekend. Nico, obviously you work with Fox. Like, thoughts on that side of things? I think it's cool how they've got creative, and I mean, this track, out of any on the circuit, if there's aerodynamic benefit to have, you want to take it, right?
Yeah, I remember back in the day, Cathro saying the skin suit was something like 6 seconds faster on this track.
Yeah.
Doing like consistent runs on average.
Yeah. I guess we had baggy moto kit back then, so it's not as polarized, but
the difference was greater, right? Going from a motocross kit to a skin suit.
Yeah.
Now we've kind of gone something a little bit closer to something not as far as a skin suit.
So yeah.
It seems like the next step. It's not like a huge leap to go to what they're running, and it doesn't look bad.
No, I think it looks great. Yeah.
Yeah. Like our gear's already tight, and I think it's maybe not something that'll ever be for sale, but if they can promote their colors and their branding and do something that gets attention racing, it seems like a win-win, and also gives the riders an advantage is the main thing.
Yeah. Apparently, Laurie commented that he was overshooting jumps that he wouldn't normally expect to be, and maybe that's partly something to do with it. And I saw Nina this morning, and she said it was the most comfortable thing she's ever ridden in. She's been super happy in it all weekend, and that showed in her race run. So can't be bad. Changes to schedule this year. Ollie, let's start with you. We've moved semi-finals onto Quali Day, which makes for a big day. How have you found it? Like, as a fan, for me, I like it. It's cool. We're back to this big climax day of racing where one run counts. But there's a lot for riders, staff, and everyone to do on the Saturday or the quali day.
Yeah, it is. On paper, when I saw it, absolutely awesome. Like you say, bringing everything into kind of a qualifying day and then a one-run finals day is absolutely awesome. The changes on the day in terms of like the riders practicing the track, it actually only really leaves the Friday now to practice, because the Saturday morning is, okay, you'll make some small adjustments, but you're more in your process of getting ready to race process rather than still learning the track process, you know. So you've got to get most of your stuff kind of complete by Friday afternoon before the Saturday, where you only get an hour and a half. So it changes that slightly. But as a day on Saturday, brilliant. And as a team, yeah, busy, but no, great. That all kind of works. The one downside, and we definitely suffered from this, is that then if the team qualify but then don't get through the semi, your Saturday evening, which a couple of my riders did, the Saturday evening is then you're a little bit more like lower sort of vibe in the pits because you haven't qualified, you know,
yeah.
Or you haven't semied.
Yeah.
So like, you know, we'd have got to Saturday evening, say Joe, for example, he was like a second off getting through to finals.
Yeah.
And so we'd have got to Saturday evening all still in good vibes, you know, analysing things, getting ready for the next day and feeling good. But instead, we were like a little bit like, oh, shit, you know, we haven't got there kind of thing. So, but that's probably just a personal thing to my team. I think generally better. And yeah, at the end of the day, the one run finals thing is the way to go for me.
For sure. Yeah. And we had some red flags on quali day. There was at least one nasty crash. I'm not sure how that rider's doing. I hope that everything is okay. But that obviously, when that happens and we have track closures and red flags, things get pushed back. Some people therefore had to do a quali run, three quarters of a race run, and then go back up to repeat the runs where they were red flagged. So it did push it pretty late in the day, hey? Like, and the weather came in as well, which played around with things a little bit.
Yeah, it felt like a big day for somebody that did the full schedule. We obviously, with Acer Racing Junior, for the team, there was like a lot. There was something going on the whole time. It was nonstop. Doing both the races was crazy. Like, get the training done in the morning, do the first race, and then come back, and you're like, do it all over again. Deja vu. Groundhog Day. But I think for someone watching it was pretty cool, because you got to watch the show from semifinals. Was pretty exciting. Like, yeah. I watched the rest of it after my run from the bottom, and it was cool to see everybody's run. Got you excited to watch the race the next day, and then again the next day, watch the final race. So for spectators, I think it's good. For athletes, that Saturday is a busy day.
Yeah. And how was your day, mate? It feels like you're getting back closer to where you'd want to be, huh?
I honestly felt really good in my race. I wasn't sure how I'd be coming into this. I've been focusing more on the team and making sure everybody had what they needed, rather than putting myself and my own preparation first. And I honestly thought I was just going to take it for fun, use my own racing to test some things and just enjoy it. And I didn't realize how much having a teammate actually helps things. I haven't had one in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
So getting to ride with Angel was so much fun. We could compare lines. And looking back, I think that helped me so much when I was teammates with Aaron for so long. Like, we would ride together at all the races. We would go through the lines together. And I don't think then I realized how much it helped me. And I don't think I realized it till right now. But going with Angel to do all the practice and then watching GoPro with Angel and Asa, is something when you're by yourself, you don't have anybody else's opinion to talk over something with. So having teammates helped me a bunch. And I felt like, well, I did ride better than I have since breaking my pelvis last year. So it's really positive to see that improvement. I exceeded my own expectations. I got a lot closer to making the final than I was really expecting. Now I'm like motivated to put a little bit more effort on the racing side than the team side. Obviously, not take anything away from that, but I kind of thought, I'll just do the first couple races, see how it's going. And I'm like, man, I was 1 second off making the final. I should give it a little bit more.
Hell yeah, good man. On you. Yeah, that's awesome to hear, dude. It's good to see you in that space for sure. And then, I mean, the rain did come down and it got pretty slippy at some point in the afternoon and it took some scalps. Ethan Craik suffered, O'Sheen and Callahan suffered, Laurie Greenland suffered. And we also lost a world champion, won on this track here last year, Charlie Hatton. He was lit. I saw him at the top of his first run of the weekend and he was taking no prisoners from the get-go. I spoke to him a little bit today and I think he was genuinely pretty gutted, like a mistake that took him out. He's a bit beaten up, but also got back up in a couple corners later and snapped his chain, which then kind of jammed in the pedals and he was trying to do his, the best to kind of manage that down the hill. Do you think the world champ from the previous year should have protection?
In simple, I think, yeah. Like, and maybe I just think that because of this situation, but this sport and the way the organisers are working is to try and get more fans to come and watch, more people engaged in the sport, all of this sorts of stuff. Surely we're at Fort William. I can imagine quite a few of the fans that are leaving here today were kind of going, why is Charlie not on the list? Yeah, I've come to watch Charlie, like, yeah. You know, and like, I've come to watch the guy who won here last year, the British guy, you know, like, the young ginger lad, you know, that you can hear all this and like, and then they get here and they're like, oh right, he's not even racing, you know. It'd be like, imagine turning up to F1 and you go and see Hamilton or someone and they're like, oh yeah, he's kind of not in it, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, he does a qualifying, but he just starts at the back of the grid if he's doing rubbish, you know. So I don't know, I think it's harsh, but you know, where do you draw the line?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Should you put Laurie in as well? Because he came third at the World Champs last year. And I'm sure there's a few fans wanting to see him as well in his home race. So, you know, where do you draw the line? I hear some people saying, tell you what, let's not have any protection, just whatever. But you've still got to cut people down. So you could end up losing all of the top boys girls. So it's, I don't think you can ever get that perfectly right if you want to run a sport with the amount of riders that we have and the amount of excitement that we have. I don't think you can get it perfectly right.
Yeah, fair. And there was no room for error out there, hey? Like Martin Whiteley told me there was 20 elite males riding yesterday who've won a World Cup. I mean, that is insane.
Yeah, it's amazing how stacked the field is and how many entries we have too. Not only those guys, but the up-and-coming kids that'll take no prisoners to get into the final. You're getting it from both sides, so... It's just such a deep competitive field. I've actually heard talk about instead of doing a 60 cut and then a 30 cut and three rounds, do a say they want 30 in the final, do a first qualifier for 20 guys, and then those guys are through to the final. And then for everyone else, there's a last chance qualifier to get the next 10 spots, which maybe makes more sense because everybody gets two shots at it. If the good guys do have a mechanical, unlikely you'll have two in a row. And the guys get rewarded for qualifying through the first one. They get to sit out the second race.
Yeah.
So I've heard talk about that for next year, and I think it makes sense to me.
It'd be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? It'd be, you know, you're sort of watching that journey and people in and out, kind of F1, right?
Yeah. I was wondering which would be harder, that way to make it through the second race with fewer spots or the way we're doing it now. Both are super challenging to get through.
It's going to be interesting to see where we land with all of that stuff. But yeah, let's talk about the racing then. So we kicked off the day on site with junior women, and I have never seen or heard a bigger crowd for junior women at a World Cup race. Like, quite often it feels like it's just something that's going on while people are coming into the venue. But we had some home talent, I guess, which helps. And putting everything on to the same finals day as well, I guess, brings, you know, the site is definitely busier today. But it was wicked. It was packed. People were into it. And it was some exciting racing, Ollie, eh?
Yeah, forgetting the fans that wanted to come watch it. When I was trackside, I was loving watching the junior women. Like, they were absolutely flying now, you know, especially that top three to five girls. Like, they're on it, you know. It's not like a few years ago where it's kind of like, you know, you knew they were in it just to kind of hopefully maybe get there in elite ranks kind of thing. They're going well. As obviously there's our local young gun in Heather, but I've seen Ellie. I don't actually know her surname. She's been hanging around our pits a little bit. Sorry,
is it Hulsebosch on Union?
Yeah, that's it. And my word, she's strong, like, already, you know. She's only first year junior. And she is not bothered about hitting those rocks fast, you know. So it's, yeah, bring it on. It's absolutely amazing. It's exciting. So, yeah, no wonder they're up there watching them. I'm not surprised. It's really good to see.
Yeah, super cool. So Eli Hushovosh, I think, in third, 3.6 seconds back. Sasha Ernest didn't have the best quali, but kind of pulled it back into finals. She was 3.5 back in the end, but she cased a few of the motorway jumps, which, Nico, I'm guessing here you can't get away with that, right? You've got to get that downside.
Yeah, it's such an important section to carry speed, and it's tough to do. I mean, I've raced this track, I was thinking today, I think 12 times at World Cups. And
showing your age.
Man, I'm feeling it too. But a lot of times you go to scrub them and you just clip them and clip them. I was on the lift with Benoit Coulange, and he was saying that last year in his run, he like cased two of the jumps because he was trying to squash them too much. So it's tough to get right, and you want to stay low and not pop them to the moon to clear them. So yeah, it's hard also to build the jumps for such a a variance in speeds into there.
Yeah.
Like the top guys where they're saying 57K an hour, and to the junior women going a little bit slower than mm-hmm. that to get the jumps to not be dangerously kicky and too small for the elite men, but then still be flow at trail speed for those junior women. Yeah. So yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, definitely.
It's with those jumps, it's really hard to judge the speed you're going. I know where you can obviously see when we're watching on TV or whatever, but it's hard to judge it. And then you have the wind playing into account. Mm-hmm. And it's something over the last few years with the riders I work with, we've been trying to figure out how you can like perceive your speed. Because if you're going really fast, you can scrub the hell out of those. But everyone's been there where you scrub the hell out of them and then you case the thing. And that's 10 times worse again than going too long. So it's... yeah, it's not kind of won or lost there as such, but it's definitely just getting them right. It's really important.
Yeah, cool. And let's talk about Heather Wilson then, Ollie. I think for a lot of people, that name has come as a bit of a like, oh, who's this? But for those of us that have been knocking around the British scene for the last couple of years, we've seen the talent bubbling and we've seen what she's capable of. I spoke to her earlier in the week after she just filmed the helmet camera that Ben Cathro commented over, and everyone should go and watch that. I mean, she had a huge slide out in one of the top turns and she's just on the floor like, oh, that's a bit slippery. It doesn't seem fazed, back on it, took her glove off and her hands all puffed up and sore, and she talks about how scared she is of the river gap, and then next minute she's pushed up, sending it and talking about how easy it is in a helmet, like chuckling her way down. An incredibly good attitude. I mean, Scottish rider. I spoke to her just before we recorded the podcast actually, and she was saying she was really feeling the pressure today. She was struggling to eat. She felt like she needed to do it for the Scottish crowd. Mm. And she'd shown that the pace was there. But yeah, talk about Heather a little bit from your perspective. There's some serious talent coming there.
There really is, yeah. Yeah. Her name has been branded around for quite a while in the UK. she's shown the speed. She's shown the confidence. And I think as you were probably describing there, like a few of the younger women coming through, the bravery, you know, it's huge. I actually work with a slightly younger lady who lives in South Wales, and like it's insane, the bravery, much more than the men. It is you know, us men, we don't like crashing, it hurts too much, you know, it's not good. So and so Heather's one of this kind of breed of women that are coming through, brave, confident. And as Heather showed today, with a load of talent, you know, and that's why she won it. I got to say, I didn't expect her to win it.
But, okay.
I know she's very, very good, but seeing the likes of Ellie, I was kind of thinking it maybe was going to be more in hers to take this weekend. But super impressed in Heather to deliver. And you've got to add, under the pressure she was in, especially if she's not eating and all this sorts of stuff, under that pressure... Awesome. Yeah. I'm really pleased for her.
Stoked. And they've got a cool setup. They're on the Muckoff Young Guns team, which is you know, it's a relatively small budget. Mm-hmm. But the mechanic there, or the team manager, they've got a almost F1 pit wall style setup with monitors. And each of the mechanics' stands have got a data connection. So they can run the data from the bike stand down into the main monitors so that he can then go and analyze the data on the bike and advise on changes for the riders. Like, they're not doing it on a lot of money, but they're doing it smart. So, yeah, it's cool to see. And Aris van Leeuwen was the last rider on the hill, Nico. And, you know, she was putting in a lightning fast time. To be fair, she's very dangerous when she's going hard. But unfortunately a puncture finished her run. Yeah, I guess it's one of those things, hey, but it must be frustrating.
Yeah, especially to start the season with that long winter training and build up. Yeah, it's not the way any rider wants to start, obviously. I could see the frustration on her face when she crossed the line. So yeah, hopefully she can just take the confidence in the riding and all in the qualifying run and the riding she was doing here and move on to the next one. Luckily with juniors, the points scale is a little less, so you can get back in the fight pretty quick with a few good results.
Yeah, nice. Well, let's talk about junior men. And I guess the name that a lot of people have been talking about is Asa Vermette, a young man you know very well, Nico. How's it been working with Asa throughout the weekend? I mean, he came in, I think he'd only gotten his downhill bike after his accident earlier in the season, like a couple of days ago at Glencoe with you for a few laps. I loved watching you guys. I came on track walk with you. And normally I would say you track walk pretty quickly. I think that was the longest track walk I've ever been on with you. And it was like Asa in the middle, you on one side. What a mate!
Good job, G Willie!
Greg Williamson just riding past our Forest-based podcast studio. Yeah, like you on one shoulder, Angel on the other. Like, this is where you go, you do this. Like, your bike's like weighted here, you're pressing in here, you're light here. And it was like you programmed him and he just came down off of the hill and was like, yeah, install program, went up, and his first run of the weekend, GoPro is online for anyone to go and watch. And I'd recommend that. Like, he was lit from the first lap. Like, talk us a bit about how it's been kind of trying to keep Acer under control over the week.
Yeah, he's such an easy kid to work with, I'll say. Like, he doesn't complain about everything. He likes everything. The most common words out of his mouth are, so stoked, insane, dude. He's just, it's refreshing how positive and excited he is. I can remember back to those days, too. Try to hang on to that a little bit myself. Bring it back. He broke his hip at the Tennessee National about 7 weeks ago now, and wasn't sure when he would actually be back racing. I spent a night in the hospital with him there. He was just there with me and the team. His parents weren't there, so it was kind of scary for him. I don't think he's had a big injury before. Yeah. Like, I think he broke a wrist, but nothing of that caliber. And in the hospital that day, they told us 8 to 12 weeks to recover. And his eyes lit up like, oh, Fort Williams in 7 weeks. That math doesn't add up. But once he got home to see a specialist, they said it might be a bit quicker, and then had an x-ray every 2 weeks. And just last week, the doctor said, yeah, it looks like you have enough bone growth on there. If you feel good, you can go for it. So we didn't cancel his flight until that last checkup, and it's a good thing we didn't. He came over, and we ended up going down the road to Glencoe to just get a couple laps on the bike on Wednesday. It was his first time riding since breaking his hip. And he looked awesome that day. So he said, yeah, all right, dude, go for it. And tried to advise him that this track is very physical. And most of the time after 3 days, like, you really feel it in the body. And he didn't really listen. He did 7 runs the first day and did a couple of full pulls. And I think by the time his quali came around, he felt pretty tired.
Yeah.
He said he made a big mistake where he chest to bars and almost threw it away. Actually, Brooke McDonald came up on the gondola when I was up because the junior qualifying was in between our qualifying and semifinal. And when I got to the top, Brooke said, your junior had a near-death hugie I saw under the gondola. That would have ended him. And that's pretty heavy words coming from Brooke McDonald, of all people.
Nice work.
So it must have been a big one if that's what Brooke had to say.
Yeah.
But it just showed that he was exhausted. And then try to just tell him to chill as much as he can, get the recovery in. Try to do a smooth run. Don't need to hit every hole as hard as you can. Try to drive through them with momentum rather than smash them.
And yeah.
His run on the TV looked like a veteran ride. I mean, he impresses me a lot when he rides, but this one, coming to Fort Bill for your first time, I think it was his 10th run down the track, and it just looks so smooth and easy. And I think his time would have been 12th in Elite. So all things considered, I think he lived up to the hype. He's got a lot of it, but he's just an incredible rider, and I'm honored to have him on my team.
That's amazing. And he didn't have it all easy, right? Daniel Parfitt, local lad. Apparently his dad works at the Nevis Range, which is a great story. Was on fire, qualified fastest, and Asa was sat in the hot seat watching him come down the hill. And there wasn't a shortage of aggression. Like, he really went for that, huh?
Yeah, he did really go for it, but he kept it upright, you know?
Yeah.
And in that position, from what I gather last year, you know, well, I don't even know the lad. Some of the guys on my team do, but from what I'm hearing, you know, last year he was struggling to qualify for World Cups. You know, he was in that kind of trying to make it kind of stage, and he turns up at the first one. Sure, it's his home event, so we know he knows the track well, but to take nothing away from him, qualifies fastest. And and as he dropped in, I thought, you know, I'm sure we all did, right? You know, a young lad, first time qualify fastest, you're thinking he's probably not going to keep it upright. In fact, you know, more often than not the rider wouldn't. And but he laid it down, you know, and it was super impressive. I'm sure, like, he wanted to win it, but he's got to be very happy with taking away. It was third in the end, wasn't it, he got, right?
No, he was second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So he's got to be absolutely stoked with that.
Yeah, incredible work. So, Nico.
Just watching his run was amazing. He was just going for it, dude.
Yeah.
I talked to him for a bit at the end because we were behind the podium with Asa. And I was like, dude, hats off for just sending it. You could tell he gave it absolutely everything he had. And you got to respect whenever a rider does that. It was really exciting to watch.
Yeah, it was all in. So how does it feel, mate? Like, a couple of years after you knocked up your own bike, basically, and you're here with a team of three riders and you've won a World Cup. And it's not just a World Cup. You've won, you know, Acer, first time out after injury. It must be a massive pat on the back for what you've done and put together.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing I've learned is, like, racing rarely goes the way you planned it. And you got to really appreciate these moments when it does. Asa's a really special kid, and I'm just really fortunate to have him on my bike. I'd say it's 99% him, and the bike didn't hold him back at all. It allowed him to show everything he had. So, but in all my experience, that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, good stuff. Good work, mate.
Thank you.
I'm stoked for you.
Cheers.
Let's talk about elite women again. You know, a category with huge depth. We talked about it a lot, but we've got a couple of names in there that we might not always have seen in the top 10. Both Anna Newkirk and Michaela Parton put in an amazing job on Saturday. Great quali runs, backed up with great semi runs, and solid performances in the finals. I spoke to Anna after her quali, I think it was, and she couldn't get her head around what just happened. They're on that Contra steel bike. And she said in the winter she'd gone 10 mil longer on the front end, 5 mil longer on the rear, and was just feeling way more stable on the bike. And a fellow USA athlete, Nico, cool to see Anna, like, on another level of pace from where she seemed to be last year.
Yeah, Anna's such a nice person, and always exciting to see her do well at the races. Pretty good friends with Evan Turpin, who owns Contra and designed and developed the bike. He's pretty open, like, guys in our position as, like, small frame builders, bike nerds, we love chatting with each other and talking and share a bunch of information between the two of us. I actually did a day with Evan where he rode my bike and I rode his for a day shuttling. So super cool to see them have success as a team and Anna herself. And I think it's only going to continue.
Yeah, definitely. And Michaela, and another local hero, huge amounts of pressure on the shoulders of riders that come from this area. She's on the posters in the Nevis Range place. Like, there's a lot there for her to deal with. I spoke to her after her run, and she said, you know, on any other weekend, she'd be stoked with ninth at a World Cup. But she said she made some mistakes. It was hard to keep her head clear on what she was doing, and she didn't feel like she was as focused on her run as she had been the previous day, where she just seemed to get into the zone a bit. But still, Cool to see, Ollie, eh?
Really cool to see. Yeah, you know, whenever I turn up at the bike park, it seems like Michaela's there, you know? Whether that's Duffy, whether that's here, whether that's Loser, you know, like in Portugal, she's there getting the laps in, doing the training. So, you know, she works hard for it. And she deserves everything she gets, I think. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, after qualifying so well, she's going to have wanted to be a little bit further up the field. But top 10 at home, she's got to be happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about the top five. So Gloria Scarzi in fifth. She's focusing on downhill fully this season, I believe. So she was, I guess, considered an enduro rider before, and she dabbled a bit. But she's come over full time. She's on the Canyon Collective Pirelli team with the help of Fabian Burrell. Fifth place, first kind of World Cup of a season where she's going all in on it. It's quite a dangerous start.
Yeah, anytime you can get on a podium, I mean, there's a lot of riders that would love to be in that position. So for her to do it first time, really focusing on DH is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Cami Balanche coming off injury. I guess we didn't know where she'd be. She didn't know where she'd be. Just looked like she kind of, again, measured, calculated. Cami, she knows how to go about a World Cup season. No point throwing it away on the first weekend of the year. Fourth place, 3.9 back off the win. I'm guessing she'd be relatively happy with it. I'm sure she'd always want more, but like, that's a solid start.
It really is, yeah. And I think she sort of quietly got on with her job this weekend, didn't she? You know, you said measured and calculated, and I think she just was head down, didn't get too involved from what I saw in anything else and any of the kind of additional stuff, too much media. It's kind of like, right, let's just go and race my bike. Like you say, she can start the season and then put herself in a place to be able to build from there. And she's going to be dangerous as the season goes on, for sure.
Definitely. Tani Seagrave, definitely back in the hunt. Looked great on the bike and on the track all weekend, rocking the speed suit in style with some Larry pink patterns on it. Yeah, went well. She'd obviously shown that she had the potential to win yesterday, I think. Didn't quite come together today. But 1.8 off the win, I'm guessing, you know, she's going to be pretty happy with that, to know she's back on the podium, back on form, and a good start to the season.
Yeah, for sure. And through all the rounds, being as fast as she was, I think she's got to be stoked. It's been a long road back. For any rider that gets knocked off the top, it's like the train leaves the station and you're not on it. And you got to try to catch up to what everybody's been doing while you were away. In addition to getting yourself back to even where you were. So it's got to be a good feeling to start the season like this and know how, you know, Valley was so dominant in the past year, and to be that close to her, I think it shows that maybe the blood's in the water a little bit for some of the other girls, and, you know, they got a shot. They're going to go into the next round with a plan to beat her and some motivation.
Definitely. That is, yeah, that's bang on, mate. And Nina Hoffman, Ollie, I saw her this morning. She was super confident, goes well here in general, but she's had a bit of a rough ride of late here, wanted to make up for that, and it looked like it was done, right? The run looked really clean, I thought. Like, really, it was a solid run.
Really solid one run, and you wouldn't expect anything less from her at Fort William. I think this is one of her stronger tracks, isn't it? It's the one where, yeah, I thought she was going to win it, to be honest, and I think there's you just looking at closer at the times. It almost looks confusing, doesn't it? Because she won pretty much all the sectors.
Yeah, yeah.
Except sector one by about half a second or so.
Yeah, 0.6 off in the first sector. But
she won all the others. And then so it must have just cost her on the sprint at the bottom. So maybe the speed suit didn't do its job. I don't know.
Who knows, mate? Who knows?
Speed suit or flight attendant? Which one do you want?
Well, this is it. Yeah, yeah, this is it. And there has been a bit, and we'll talk about this, maybe a bit of a battle of the electronics this weekend, and it's played out in the men's race as well. But yeah, Valley Hole, for quite a lot of that run, looked like it wasn't quite going to go her way. And then she's turned it round right at the end. 0.56 is a narrow margin, but she's, I believe, quite stoked with that.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's also hard in her position on top to keep the streak alive. Feels like it probably gets tougher each race that goes by, and the girls coming up are more motivated to try to knock her off. So yeah, it's got to be more of a relief than anything, I can imagine, in her position. But she delivered.
Yeah, fair play. It's an exciting start to the season for the women's racing, for sure. Let's move on to the men's.
Just to add to the women's, because it's tighter than ever now. You know, we have to raise the fact that, like, that top, and I'm going to raise the fact that the top 15 or even 20 are separated by a more realistic racing time difference now. Like it used to be that, like, if you're out the top 10, you're about a minute and a half away in the women's, and that's no disrespect, but that's just fact of how it was,
yeah,
you know, 10 years ago. Whereas now, and I haven't looked closely, and you've got it in front of you, but it's more like 10 seconds are separating the top 10 kind of spec.
Yeah, which is around the 14, 15 mark.
There you go. 10, yeah. So that's more similar to what the men's is in terms of like tight racing. So it shows that what we're starting to do now is like at a big group of female athletes all pushing each other really closely. And I'm super impressed. I'm going to say it now, but I think it's got to be top 15 through to the finals. And actually, why don't they make it top 30 like the men?
Yeah, it would be nice. It would be 100% nice to see more women on track. I mean, I guess they're juggling broadcast windows and times, but I think they deserve more women in there for sure.
Totally.
But we'll see how that pans out. All right, we'll move on to the men's, and I guess a few honourable mentions that we should work through. Reese Wilson, a couple of horrific years for him, a lot of ups and, well, mostly downs, I guess. Fought through it, came back here, and again, I think it would have been easy for Reese to get carried away, right? He's got that home pressure, back at a World Cup, everyone wants him to win, he's got this full custom bike and kit, he's looking pretty good, and he's just got the work done this weekend. He's come back from, you know, serious injuries, not feeling as fit as he wants to be. He was also red flag, so he's one of the riders that basically did three runs on Saturday. Nico, impressive performance from Reese to be in 16th today.
Absolutely. As you said, he didn't have it easy. He went through the four downhill stages.
Yeah. He has an enduro, isn't it?
And he made it through each one. Like it's really tough. No protection, you could get cut each step of the way. And for being off as long as he has, I thought he did amazing. Like we've been talking about the depth of the field and the level of competition, and for him to come through and deliver in all the way to the final, even with the red flag, I mean, hats off to Reese. I hope that sets him off on the right foot this season, and he can continue to build from there.
Yeah, it's always good to see him at the races. Creative rider that provides entertainment. Another rider that's come back from serious injury, Amory Piron. Again, 15th. That's a solid start to the season, and it looked like he just got the work done again. Didn't get too carried away. Put in some good solid runs.
Yeah, somebody said to me, they were like, "Oh, Omari's a bit back," and I was like, "Hold on a minute! This guy's coming back from that injury. You know, his broken neck. He's had a whole year off the bike. Apparently, that was a lot worse than anybody's made out as well. And you know, none of us other than him and his team are going to know fully. But it's funny. People just expect him to turn up and just go Omari speed down here again. And it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're Omari, you're not that stupid. You know, you can't do it. Like you have to build back again. And it normally takes, you know, I think 6 months to a year for a rider to be fully, you know, a mature, experienced rider. These younger guys seem to just bounce back on because Ace is a different situation. But
kids are made of rubber.
Yeah, they're different. But, you know, as a mature rider who knows the game, for him to come back post a top 15 place is credit to him. Really, really good.
Yeah, good work.
I think the problem is he's done it before. Lords, he won after a year off, so
yeah,
people might have been expecting
maybe that's where it's from,
plus the three in a row, so
yeah. true. Let's move into the top 10, and again, honorable mention to Greg Williamson, an ex-teammate of yours. Nico, I think we on track together.
Yeah. We spent two seasons together.
Yeah, he's placed eighth here on two occasions, I think, at World Champs and in 22. So I think seventh is his best World Cup result. I'd need to double check.
I do think he's had a few other top tens as well. So he's done well at Fort William a few times. It's super cool. I think there's equal parts motivation and pressure from being a local rider. I'd say you got a little bit of an advantage being able to ride the track. And I mean, I would too if I lived near a World Cup track. Not to practice for the race, but to practice riding my bike if you had access to a racetrack. So awesome to see him pull it off. I think it's always important for him for world selection. Obviously, the GB team is so hard to make, and he's always been able to click off a top 10 at this race to get on the team. So it had to be a few different aspects of motivation, but yeah. Greg's such a nice guy. Stoked to see him do well.
And he had a big smile on his face, so he's obviously happy.
Made the crowd happy.
Yeah, keep the Scottish crowd happy. Let's talk Benoit Coulon, Jolly. very well executed run. Again, looked pretty in control. Sixth place, good start to the season for an overall contender.
Yeah, we know he's an overall contender now. We know he's going to be throughout the season a contender for the win. He started in sixth place. I think there's probably about 30 riders that would think they should be starting with a sort of sixth place and haven't. And he's made sure he has. You know, it's sometimes when you go through that season where he's proved himself now, you know, it's kind of the season after that is arguably the harder one, you know, because it's like you've got to keep that up, and actually your expectations are even higher now because you've proved that you can win these, and so you want to be coming out and winning them more often, at least being close every week. So he's done that. He's close again, just off the podium. I'm sure he'd want to sneak a little bit closer, but round one he's in the fight. So yeah, we'll see him getting closer and closer as the year goes on, especially as we get to sort of Central Europe, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Nico, good friend of yours, Lucas Shaw. We have to go back, you know, away to those days where he was like qualifying super high and it never quite converted. Qualified really high here, kept it all going good, fifth place. Will Luca be happy with that, to be back in that sharp end and on the podium?
I think mostly yes.
Okay.
After yesterday in semis being within a half second of the win, he'll have tasted what it's like a little bit and hungrier than the other dudes maybe for his first win.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he probably wanted a little bit more than fifth. But if you told him a month ago he was going to start the first race on the podium, he'd be stoked. They had a new bike they were a little bit unsure of. I'd rode with him a bunch at home. We'd try to coordinate what days we were going to go ride downhill and shuttle together. And his mechanic, Jim, was over with him for, I think, 6 weeks. Like, they spent a lot of time together.
Whoa.
And, he said the bike was better in some places, and to achieve that, gave up time in other places. So they were trying to get it the best they could for this race, and I think coming in with a new product, you're always a little bit unsure until it's proven. And, man, the whole Canyon team absolutely crushed it. Like, Fabian has got to be happy.
Yeah.
Not even just, like, obviously the guys on the new bike, all on the podium. Everyone that had the new bike.
Yeah.
And then his Canyon collective team and the Canyon Pirelli team had so many riders in the final. Everybody was crushing it. So,
yeah,
hats off to them. And hopefully Luca can build from here. I'm always rooting for him. I train with him all the time. So when Luca can get a better ride, he can buy more dirt bikes and go ride his dirt bikes. So it's always good for me.
More toys to play with. Yeah. Ollie, let's talk about Dakota Norton. He rocked up this week and I guess shocked a few people with a 75 mil rise bar. Kind of looked like he was off down the shops, but he's making that thing work and he looks super comfy on it. And he was the first rider to put down a really like super hot time, I guess, today.
He's a real racer, isn't he? You know, whether he's got shopping bars on a thing or not, he's an absolute racer, and I love it. Like, you see it what trackside, you just see the lines he take. There's like three or four lines coming into the woods, and you watch, and he's the one guy that will use all of them in one run through. and you're like, yeah, he's totally. In fact, I learned something from Randy Lawrence this weekend, and I think in the motocross you call it sweeping or something like this. It's a term I hadn't heard in the UK. I don't know whether that's, so I'm not in motocross, I'm not in the States, but, and I think that's where you go across the lines, and I guess this is Dakota. He's sweeping. He's not, well, I'm doing that line because there's a rut there, or that line because there's a rut there. He's going where the tape is from, or poles are from there to there. So I'm going to find the fastest line in between those poles.
Yeah.
And, pleasure to watch. I actually think, on paper, those bars seem like a stupid idea, but it looked really good.
Yeah,
his position on the bike and everything looked great. So I don't know how I'd get the thing around the corner. I just feel like this, like
he's gone from Stack to Norton to Rise Norton.
Yeah, yeah, true, yeah.
I think the human body can adapt to anything.
Mm.
And I think if you believe in it, it's way more powerful than it being the right or wrong setup.
Mm.
And now he had something to prove too, which gave him a lot more motivation.
Yeah.
So he was stoked on his setup. He believed in that setup, and that's the best setup for him.
And he's put it on the podium.
Absolutely. He rode it amazing.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. The bar height between him and Finn Couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
Do you remember back in the day? And because I want to see how this impacts, like, you know, the fans, people who watch sport, other riders. And you remember back in the day, Blenky would have flat handlebars, so everybody copied him in the racing scene. And then everyone
like
went
2009?
And bought. Everyone went and bought flat handlebars. And what I want to see is, are we going to go to the bike parks and everyone's going to have 80 mil bars?
For sure, it's going to start a trend.
Yeah, you know? I already had a WhatsApp message on the like my mates group saying, where do I get some higher rise bars from? So,
how much further can he go before he needs a crossbar?
Well, that defeats the object of the whole chin bashing off the stem thing, I think, because that's why he's gone high rise, right, rather than high stack.
I think the stack, too, would create a lot of twisting.
Yeah, okay.
So those, like, long bolts through.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the bars are a better way to do it, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, just jokes. I'm sure he hears, a lot of it.
Yeah, I saw him
And it's just more fire in the belly to...
I saw him on the bus the other day, and I think he's, he's expecting flack for basically wherever he heads these days.
That's the motivation he needs. Maybe it was all part of the plan.
Who knows? But it's worked pretty well.
And it does work, because other riders go, the answer's in the handlebars. And the answer's not in the handlebars. The answer's into how the rider executes their run, you know, as the rider themselves. But he'll get other riders thinking, going, oh, wow, you know, will I post a 4:10 if I, or whatever he posted on finals, I can't remember now, but will I post that time? Will I be on the podium? Will I be going as fast as him if I do it? So, watch the space. I guarantee we'll see higher rise bars coming at the next round.
Yeah. Well, and we mentioned Finney was the second and a little bit ahead of Dakota in third place. an aggressive but well-executed run from Finn, I would say.
Yeah, Finn. It was. He desperately wants to win these things every week, doesn't he? You know, and I've seen it from his world champs run in Australia back in 2017.
Yeah,
17. And he wants it so bad, you know. And I think his best year was like sort of end season before, going into last year, and he's still got the want. I think with a little bit less want, he'll be even more dangerous again. You know, I think if he can just rein it in that 0.0-something%, he could be a very dangerous rider. I mean, he is a very dangerous rider.
Yeah.
But I think we'll see more wins that he's expecting in himself. You can see it. He's, you know, he's sitting next to that guy called Bruni who keeps bloody winning. You know, like, so he's kind of like, I want more of this.
Yeah.
It's got to be a little bit of a confidence thing too. Mm. Like, Bruni has the confidence from the wins.
Mm.
And then Finn is going for them and only has one so far.
Mm.
So I think when you watch the two of them ride, Bruni's just a little bit more deliberate with everything.
Yeah.
And it's got to help him a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's super interesting. Loads to say about Bruni, but I'll let you get there first, Chris.
Yeah, well, two men left to talk about. Troy Brosnan. Again, a couple of years of ups and downs for this guy. Like, one of the most consistent riders, but not at the level where we'd normally expect him to be being consistent for a little while. Feels like Troy's back, Nico. Like, whatever's gone on, new bike, flight attendant, whatever it is, was on form.
Yeah, forever we've seen Troy with a 1-2-3 number plate and broke his ankle, was it 2 years ago, coming into the season? And kind of struggled a little bit coming back from that in last year. So he's back where he belongs. I think he definitely wanted to win the race. Every one of those, I think really is the top four that after yesterday thought they had a shot at winning. They were so close to
it.
Last man down the hill. He's won it a few times in that position before, and he's won here before. So Bruni's a tough man to beat, though. He probably knew he needed everything he had. It seemed like a little bit of a curveball with the rain in semifinal when Troy qualified first. Bruni was way up in the qualifying, and then the rain kind of allowed those other guys to creep in a little bit, where maybe Loic played that one smart.
Yeah, Bruni was 6 seconds off his quali time in semis. I think he probably just wound it to a point where he knew he was going to be safe, eh?
But the other guys had to know that he had that in him, and if they were going to go for a final run to win, they had to beat whatever Loic had, so... Yeah, I'm sure he would have liked to win, but in the end, is a really good start.
Yeah, definitely.
It must be worrying for the others now Troy's back, you know, because let's be honest, last year I don't think the people in the top five were too worried about Troy.
Yeah,
and now,
okay,
like, he's come back here and he's looked fast all weekend, he's laid fast times down all weekend, and it's like, oh God, there's another one.
It's one less podium spot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or one less podium spot to fight for. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Troy's back, and I remember Poland, we're not sure about, but we got Leogang in a couple of rounds' time, and Troy on form, and Leogang's a hard man to beat. So it's
true.
This could be a nice, healthy start to the season for Troy, for sure.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, let's talk about Loic Bruni. He's looked confident all week long, which he doesn't normally in Fort William. He knows this track is kind of his nemesis. He's talked about it on many occasions, not one here in the past. Had some pretty horrible crashes here in the past. It felt like he was here to win. He turned up in the press conference. He had the swagger. It looked like he was ready to go. Ollie, you've obviously been up on track and watching the riders. What are your observations on Loic this week?
First thing, he actually said in the press conference he's changed quite a lot through the winter, didn't he?
True.
And I think he's changed quite a lot with his training, his physique, and all this sorts of stuff. There's loads of tweaks and changes there. He also said something about the fact, you know, he feels nice and settled with the new partner and all this sort of stuff. So life, you know, background training, all of this stuff was kind of as tweaked and changed. Coming into this event, before I'd heard that press conference, I thought, okay, is this going to work? You know, you've got a formula that's worked so well for so many years and got you this many wins. You're a brave man to change the formula,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, fair.
And to see him on track, I think he's riding slightly differently as well. How he's riding, I don't know whether this is because his physique's changed or because he's made a conscious effort to how he's standing on the bike. But there's something slightly different about how he's doing it. So again, I was kind of thinking, maybe he'll be out the way. Maybe we haven't got to worry about him anymore, but... glad I didn't say that out loud, because you can never say that about that man. And then so with the Bruni mentality, the Bruni confidence, as you just said, Nico, like that, he knows he can win these things. He knows the game. He knows the process. He's surprised when he doesn't win them. Added to those few tweaks and changes, I mean, we've got a dangerous man that's a little bit more dangerous now. So, I don't know what your thoughts were, Nico, but it was a very impressive run and a brilliant weekend by him.
Every time I saw him riding this weekend, he just looked so good on the bike, just so precise. And we've said it before, is it how strong he is? Is it his timing and technique? Or is it the bike? It's all three working together.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, he just rises to the occasion. He deals with pressure better than probably any current rider. Mm. When he's the last man at the top of the hill, he has the most motivation to go for it. He really rises where others are paralyzed in that situation.
Yeah.
And watching that final run from him, when he came down, there was still two riders to go, and I thought, nobody's going to be able to beat this time. They can all go try 10 times again, and I don't think they could beat that time. Loic just rode that run perfectly, and it looked easy for him, too. Didn't look like he put a foot wrong.
Yeah.
If he can do that on this track, which has kind of been his nemesis, he's never won here before, and he always says that Fort William, you just can't figure it out. So if he's figured it out on this track, it's gonna be a tough year to beat Loic.
Yeah, take that Loic Bruni confidence that it felt like he had coming into this weekend. Add on the fact that you've just won on your effectively the track that you've never been able to do it on, and then fast forward 2 weeks to Poland, and I'm guessing everyone's going to be somewhat nervous of how they compete against him.
Yeah, he's super dangerous. Poland's going to be a whole different thing, though, isn't it? You know, like, no one's got any experience of the track. And we know that Bruni likes this high experience. You know, I know he's never won here, but he's definitely had plenty of tries.
He knows what to expect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's Poland is going to be a clean slate. But, yeah, the confidence is everything, isn't it, in this game? And like I say, an already confident guy with a little bit more confidence from this win is going to be awesome, isn't it?
So. I'm stoked. It's a great way to get the season going, eh, Nico? Like, we've got another amazing season of racing ahead of us.
It was so good. And just watching the screen at the bottom, the amount of coverage on the track was so
best
good.
We've ever had here, huh?
You could see almost the full track in a 4-minute run.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch, dude. I can't can't wait for the season.
I'm glad the cloud disappeared, though, because for the junior women earlier in the day, like the top three or four cameras were just white.
Yeah.
So it was good that the cloud moved out of the way, because there's not a lot. Even when you Warner Brothers Discovery, there's not much you can do about that. Eh?
Yeah, and that's the risk, isn't it, with filming in that way. Obviously, we've got an open hillside and they're filming with high zoom, which looked awesome, in my opinion. But yeah, the risk is if the cloud comes in, what's the plan B? But hey.
Exactly. Mm. Right, well, we need to wrap up with the most important part of the podcast. I get more messages about this than anything else.
I was hoping we were going to change as well, Chris.
You always struggle. Well, we'll come to you last. Yeah. I'm going to go to Nico first. Nico, you were fighting pretty hard for Lit Kit this week, mate.
I really actually did like our kits, man. Normally, I go for like a black and white. I normally tell Fox, like, just do black or white, timeless. I like them. And they came with these pretty cool green kits with the fluoro touch to them. And I was a little bit worried because I have a red helmet. Uh-huh. I was like, it's gonna look like Christmas, green and red. But in the photos, I was like, damn, I look pretty good.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. I take that while I can. but I think if I'm gonna put my vote in, and I'm always pretty bad for associating it with a good rider, but I like the way Bruni looked.
His
gear, number one on the back.
A big number one. Could you have got a bigger number one on the back of that jersey?
He deserves it if he can.
Oh, hell yeah.
Put it down the pants. he looked good, and he rode good with it, and yeah, I was a big fan.
Yeah, fair. I'm going to give a special mention. I don't think it's quite my lit kit, but I like the fact that Norco have thought about this differently, that they've turned up with everything and it stands out. And fair play, like, they haven't followed the norm and they've gone out, you know, outside the box a bit. I think Nick Larson was behind that design and it's been pretty consistent across the whole team. But I think for me this weekend, like, the speed suit and then Tani's version of it, I think probably looked the best. I just like the innovation, but also, like, I think it looks cool. People on the internet maybe getting fired up about skin suits and all that, but realistically, it doesn't look a whole lot different to what everyone else is wearing anyway. It's just a
honestly,
cool thing.
I had to look at Greg's kit really closely to see if he was wearing it or not.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. He was just wearing a normal Fox kit. So if it's that hard to tell, then I don't think it looks bad.
Yeah. There we go. Ollie, we've filled 2 minutes
here
talking about
kits. Yeah, if you keep filling it, I'll keep thinking. No, to be fair, like...
You guys look good.
Yeah, I'm going to say other than our kit, because that red, I love red, racing red.
Yeah,
you know, it's the colour. Like, for me, it's the colour. So, naturally, I'd give it to us. But let's say I'm not allowed to do that. I have to say, I'm in agreement with you, forgetting the kit, the speed suit, I think, is innovation. You know... the riders on my team are definitely like, oh, Greggy, how can we get this a bit more nipped and tucked? You know, it's definitely a thing. And I think, yeah, credit to those guys. And, yeah, I'm going to give it to Tane. Like, I think she got the most hype about it, like, online and stuff like that. Some of it not actually all good, if I'm perfectly honest, which, or not very respectful as well, so, which was a bit bad. But
there was some bad stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't. I think, like, who needs to say that stuff, you know, just... Like, if
you can't say something good,
yeah, exactly. But that's
how you give
every
snowflake in the world a platform to voice their opinion.
That's the problem. Yeah, exactly. But we can't fix that problem. That's a whole other story. But yeah, I think Tane, she came out swinging with that kit, quite literally. Looked amazing. Suits her as well. I love it when kit kind of fits the rider. I don't mean in fit, just in fit. I mean in like in who
like
they are.
Them.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
style
that's her style, isn't it? You know, it's her vibe. She pulled it off, I'd go for Tane's kit this weekend. Yeah.
And random fact then, while we wrap up, Fox brought along like one of their top seamstresses this weekend to make sure that any modifications that were needed could be done. And Tane wanted a way of holding her gloves because she couldn't tuck them into her pants while she goes up the hill. Mm-hmm. So they put a little bit, you'll see it on the broadcast, a little white stripe of elastic in the panel on the side so she could just tuck her gloves in and then grab them out when she's at the top.
Did that make them less aero?
Well, I wouldn't worry about that. I was concerned, but when you see it on, it actually pulls pretty tight. But there's some edges there, so Who knows?
Send someone to the wind tunnel.
Exactly.
To do some data runs.
Test it, yeah.
Exactly.
Decided if they could do it.
It feels like we're going to see more and more wind tunnel stuff going on. There was definitely a few aero bits and bobs around the pits today. So I'm excited. It's cool. I feel like we're in a good spot. There's some great technology. Battle of the Electronics, the two top teams of the day. Mm. Really, would you'd have to say with Specialized Gravity and Canyon Collective both running either flight attendant or some kind of Ohlins electricery on the bikes. There's all kinds of interesting things going on. People playing with clothing, getting creative. Like it's moving forward at a pace.
And don't you think, like in this, you know, there's an edge of negativity around budgets and around like the industry and all of this sorts of stuff. But actually, you can stand here and be at a week like this. It's thriving, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, there's some challenges with overstock and all of the post-COVID situation. But innovation is happening, like you say. Yeah. Racing is close as it's ever been and has got the most amount of people. And
yeah.
I spoke about strength and depth last year loads, and it's like already we're here again with an even stronger field in even more depth. So that bit's growing, even if there are some sort of challenges with budget.
Yeah, people are lining up to get in here.
Yeah, right.
It's jam-packed. I own two bike parks, and we had the biggest months we've ever had at both parks in March.
Yeah.
So people are riding their bikes.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, good things are going to follow.
Good.
For sure.
Nice way to end on a bit of positivity. And thanks to you guys. I know you've both taken on a lot more this year. So the fact that you're making time to sit down and do this is much appreciated by me, and I'm sure much appreciated by the listeners. So
I'm not complaining. The pits are nearly down.
Yeah, we're literally sat here watching both your teams putting your pits away.
Our pits are right next to each other, and we're on the other side of the fence watching everyone else clean them up.
Can I say, not only did you beat us down the track in juniors, you've also beaten us pack our pits away, so I'm going to have to speak to the team.
You've got a bit bigger of a pit. If we were in North America, then we'd have a bigger pit.
Okay, all right. Yeah, we're taking that.
Let's see how we get on. We're
on your
America.
Side of the pond.
Yeah, that's true.
Nice one. Thanks, guys. Well, all the best. We'll see you in a couple of weeks after everything's gone down in Poland.
Nice one.
Cool. Sweet.
See you there.
Cheers.
All right, that's it for this Maxxis Tyres post-race show with Nico and Ollie. I hope you enjoyed the first race of the season as much as I did. A massive thank you to Maxxis for supporting this season. I really couldn't do these shows without them. Maxxis have incredible tyres for you no matter how or where you ride, so head over to maxxis.com or visit your local Maxxis dealer and check them out. Here are a few other links that might be useful to you too. If you'd like to support the podcast, that could be via a regular donation at patreon.com/downtimepodcast, by grabbing yourself some merch from downtimepodcast.com/shop, by sharing the episodes with your friends or online, or by subscribing to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/@downtimepodcast and sharing the videos some love with likes and comments to help the channel grow. You can follow the podcast by hitting that button in your podcast app now or over on Instagram and Facebook where we're at Downtime Podcast. And you can also get an extra dose of downtime by signing up to our newsletter at downtimepodcast.com/newsletter. As always, spread the word and make sure as many people as possible are listening. That's it for today. We're going to have another awesome episode coming up really soon. But until next time, get out and ride.